notes, new notes for chapter 12. It just hit me as you're finding your seats. Those of you online, I apologize. I just realized I didn't email out the prayer sheet tonight. So, and the new sermon notes. So you'll have to write real fast. I'm looking right at the camera right now. Write real fast because you don't have the blanks. You have the whole thing to write in. I will, with the Lord's help, someone, yes, brand new ones. I will, Lord willing, right after the service, send those out to you. So everybody remind me as I walk out, Pastor, go straight to your office and email the prayer sheet. So anyways, I guess I'm growing old. Then I just accept the fact that I forget every once in a while. I thought I had all my ducks in a row, and one little ducky got away. So there we go. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. So we're coming to the end part of the invitation that Solomon is presenting. One of the interesting things as we come to chapter 12 now is we realize that if in fact Solomon has written this book with maybe a single individual in mind, more than likely this emissary that he is dealing with, this foreigner that's come to Israel, he's telling him about the great God of Israel, the God of the universe, our God. More than likely that individual is young and vivacious, feels like he's got life ahead of him. In fact, to be an emissary would mean that he's, to put it in modern vernacular, he's climbed the corporate ladder pretty well. And he's made the crossover from, here we put it in American language, he's made the crossover from private industry into the upper echelons of government work. And for many people in the world, that's the epitome. It is. They feel like they've reached the pinnacle. You stop and consider all of our politicians, and the vast majority of them feel like they're something because they've gotten to that position, all right? We appreciate government civil servants. I wish there was that more of that spirit among our civil leaders today. But it's true, it's been true since right after Adam and Eve fell, that there's something about government work and telling people what to do that seems like that's the epitome. Well, this guy that Solomon is sharing the gospel with, the truth of who God is and that he can save their soul and give them meaning to life and have purpose for life, that this life is not wasted, this guy thinks he's got it all together, and now he's bringing that whole invitation down to a very pointed end. If you remember from last week, and I'm going to remind you, at that invitation, remember in verse 10 of chapter 11, and I'm going to read it, "Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart, put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." He told the person he was sharing the truth with, remove vexation, the sorrow, the vanity of life. Stop living for this world. And then he says, pass over evil. Stop being immoral. Make a mature, wise decision. Don't make a childish decision. You see, immorality, the vanity of this life, really is chosen by people that are children spiritually. Not in the sense that they're children of God, all right, you understand. But they are immature. They have not made a wise, right choice in choosing God. And that's the point that Solomon makes at the end of chapter 11. Now he says, chapter 12, verse 1, you with me now? Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. This is his strong point. Chapter 12 does go together. We're going to stop at, well, we might stop even before verse 8. Hopefully not, but we'll get through verse 8 tonight. But verses 9 through the end of the chapter, through 14, bring it all to a very pointed invitation to come to God, trust him, because you're going to face judgment. But here is the invitation, remember. Now, for us, the word remember simply is, oh, I forgot, now let me bring it back to mind. The term is stronger than that. Excuse me. It's used throughout the Old Testament. And it does speak of, and in fact, I haven't filled in your blank yet, but look under verse 1 here. It says, remember your Creator. It has the idea of give great attention to, and actually you could even describe or define the term remember in Hebrew as be loyal to. Solomon is introducing to this emissary, this individual now, the very fact that he's been driving at all along. You have a God who's made you. He's your creator. And by right of creation, you owe him your life. And in fact, the reality is God's designed you to have wonderful joy and blessing when you give him your life. Turn to him in salvation. He really is the only cause and reason. There's a frog in my throat and he wants to really tickle right now. I'm getting my, anyway, cough drop out. He wants to give you cause and reason for living for him. He's designed the whole plan. He's basically telling this person, jump on board, all right? Remember your Creator. Submit to the one who's made you. Now he goes on, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth. While the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. So really, as he's saying in verse 1, today, right now, Mr. Emissary, right now is the day of salvation. There's your blank. Today is the day of salvation. Turn to your Creator and trust him for your salvation. And he begins one of the most amazing and what I would call literally beautiful descriptions of death and the dying process. I want you to run with me all the way down to verse 8. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. All is vanity. Without God, this life is utterly empty. And so now he's going to bring really what I might call the great arrest. He's going to arrest the thinking of the emissary to say, listen, you may feel like you're on the top of your game. You're at the height of everything that life could offer, but death is coming. And you better prepare for that day. But he does it in such a way that it's beautiful. And so I want you to notice beautiful words on our notes. Beautiful words are powerful words. So Solomon, in this amazing poem here, in verses really starting at the end of verse 1 all the way down through verse 7, Hebrew poetry that is an amazing description of us growing old and the warning in it. So he doesn't like stick his bony finger in the young man's face and says, you're going to die, pal, and you better get yourself ready for that. Often, that it's true, but presented in a disgusting fashion can repulse anyone. I'm reminded of what Paul said to the Ephesians, speak the truth in love. And that's really what Solomon is doing here. He is arresting the attention of the emissary. Death is coming, but doing it in such a way that it keeps his attention and helps him realize the frailty of who he is and that he must be prepared to face death and his Creator. So let's go on to the poem, all right? Verse 2. Let me start in the middle of verse 1 again. Remember thy Creator in the days of youth, while the evil day comes not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. The word evil is talking about the frustrating, the end of life. It doesn't necessarily talk about immoral, but bad days. I don't know how many of you have told me, this growing old stuff isn't for sissies, right? You're describing the evil days. While the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, nor the clouds return after the rain. So remember your Creator in their youth, because there's coming a day when the sun, the moon, and the stars will be darkened, and the clouds will come back even after the rain. If I can put it this way, verse 2, you can see on our notes, this is a picture using the storm and the night to describe the process of our decay, of dying. In youth, the storm comes in life. And there's this vigor, I'm going to conquer it, get over it, pass it, because the sun's coming out again. Every person, if they live to their old age, will one day face the reality that the sun won't come out again. The sun of life. I'm not talking about the S-O-N, I'm talking about the S-U-N, right? The reality that you go through a cloudy period, you have a sickness, and it's okay, I'll get over it. And you may get over it some, but you realize, I'm not what I used to be. There's still clouds. You all understand that. And he's telling this young man, oh, you know, I feel fine, I'm great, I can conquer the world. The days are going to come when it's going to get dark, and it'll just stay dark. That's the reality of human existence. All right, verse 3. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows be darkened, and the doors shall be shut in the streets, when the sound of the grinding is low. Verse 3 and verse 4a, I have noted here that it's the picture of a house and its household, and the deterioration of that house and household over time. There have been plenty of thoughts and analysis to think of the keepers of the house as maybe the eyes, the grinders as your teeth, and so forth. I'm not sure that that's probably... what it's describing is that it's decay of a household over time. A life, you stop and consider, again, a young family, and then a man that has amassed servants and household helpers, and he's got really essentially like a little city growing around him. And then some things start falling apart. I'm talking about economically. You know, in the setting of a culture and a setting, you know, a war comes. Things downturn. And so, or the people that are working the mill, they get old. They don't know how to work the mill anymore. There's a few less of them. Or there's a summer that doesn't produce enough grain. You have to let people go. Whatever it may be. It's the whole idea of this deterioration. To me, as I was preparing for this, the thought that came to mind when my dad planted a church up in Winsalem, Wisconsin, the first house we lived in was a house half a mile outside of town, farmhouse that we rented for a year looking for a house, right across the road. So we lived, if ever you go up to La Crosse, you can still see the farmhouse we lived in. The house that was across the road between the freeway and our service road that we were on was an old dilapidated house that had been abandoned. It's no longer there. It's gone. I don't know whatever happened to it, if they actually tore it down. As a teenager, it was like, oh, this is cool. All right? Every once in a while, I go over to this place. I think Dad probably had warned me, David, be careful. I mean, I'm, you know, in my upper high school years. But I remember walking into this house, and as I started investigating, I mean, the windows were gone, the doors off, you could just... The grass is all overgrown. Who owned the land? I don't even know. There was never anyone that came by, of course. There's leaks all over on the roof. It had a second floor. I was really careful going up the stairs to the second floor. I mean, the railing was gone. It was very steep stairs, an old house. I remember one day finally taking a chance at looking down in the cellar. The stairs had been totally collapsed. There were still pickled tomatoes on the shelf down there. At least I think they were. I don't know, maybe they were pickles and that turned red. I don't know. And it hit me. It dawned on me. There was a time when this house was active. People lived here. I wonder what the memories were. And now this house, and I'm seeing it deteriorated. And that's the picture that Solomon is using here of a house that ultimately ends up being abandoned. A house and household that were flourishing at one point, and for whatever reason, it's been abandoned. And that's really what happens to our bodies at the end of the day. Our soul abandons it. It's done. Now, he's telling the emissary, pay attention. Just like a house and a household will one day dissipate, so you will too. Now, he goes on, middle of verse 4. And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also when they shall be afraid of that which is high. Also when, talking about this happens, when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way. And the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, or shall go slowly, would probably be a better way to put that there. And desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, the word probably better understood, eternal. His eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. So here we have in verses 4b to 5, you can see on our notes, the slow march to the funeral. It's march through life. We're not talking about some kind of funeral procession, but this slow process that happens in everybody's life that they're marching to the funeral. So let me just give you some clues what more than likely Solomon is referring to. All right, he shall rise up at the voice of the bird. You can't sleep anymore. The aches and pains are hurting too much. You know, it's like I found out from the Marriotts the night before they came, Saturday night, that Pastor Marriott was up because he couldn't sleep. All right? Ooh, the struggles that happen as our body deteriorates. And then all the daughters of music shall be brought low. It could be a reference to the song of birds, but he's speaking of deafness. You can't hear. Barzillai, the guy that was supposed to come back with David. David invited him to come back after he had fled from Absalom, comes back, and he was an 80-year-old man. And he said, why don't you, David said to him, why don't you come and stay in the palace? He says, why? I can't taste anything. I can't hear anything. Have this young man go, and you serve him as you would serve me. David wanted to honor Barzillai because he had cared for him so well up in Mahanaim, all right? Same thing. That's what he's describing. It just, I think it's happening to me, too. My poor younger children have to put up with a deaf dad, I guess. Every once in a while, I was like, kids, be quiet. I can't hear anybody speak anymore. It's like the noise is always there, and you hear that better than you hear the person talking to you. It's like, eh? You know, anyway, okay. That's what he's talking about. Verse 5, also when they shall be afraid of that which is high. We've all seen and we all have, know of people that are even our dear friends, and maybe it's you. The fear of falling becomes a big matter as you grow old and you become feeble. You can't walk well. And the fear shall be in the way. You're nervous about going out and about just because your body is no longer strong anymore. The almond tree shall flourish. It blossoms. Your hair goes white. That's what he's saying. And the grasshopper shall be a burden. Just have you ever seen a grasshopper that's getting up in years, up in months? All right, catch them in the fall; they can hardly move. Get them in the cold weather, and they just creep along. You think of a grasshopper. I mean, it's fun. I'm a boy. All right, it's like, yeah, let's see if I can catch them. Or they catch them. How far can he jump? You know, you touch them, so you want to see them, how far they jump and fly, all that kind of stuff. Well, the old ones can't anymore. It's the same thing. There's no more jump in your step. And desire shall fail. All of your appetites seem to wane. All the natural appetites of your life to keep you alive. I've talked with several people over just the last several days and talking about folks that they need to call and say, did you eat your meal today? Those kinds of things. It's just gone. All right? Why? Because man is heading to his eternal home. And there will come a day when the mourners will go about the street for you. Now, the important thing about this, let's be very careful. That eternal home is not describing the bliss of heaven here. It's talking about the moment when the decision to receive Christ as your Savior, to trust God as your Savior, is done. It's the eternal decision point at which nothing can change after that. You go to your eternal home, and you don't know when that's going to happen. Even if you live to old age, we always desire the next day, generally. That's human nature. That's the way God's wired us. But one day, it's done. Better be prepared for that day. Let me hasten on. Verse 6, we move from, in our notes, from beauty to broken. Is that not a description of our life? Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken. More than likely, this is a reference to a gorgeous lamp in the home, a bowl that would hold oil, or some kind of maybe candle potentially, but probably oil, hung by this from the ceiling with a silver, beautiful silver chains. And it takes broken chain, the oil spilled, the gold is done, it's all tarnished and broken. He goes on, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain. Talking about an earthen pitcher at the spring that's used. It's not a part of all culture anymore, but you always had a bucket at the well. You always did. And in fact, the community bucket, you know, everybody would share it. You'd go in that earthen bucket they would use to pour out for themselves, you know, or at the spring. This is really talking about the spring. Fill it up and pour it out or drink from it, you know, and that is broken. The spring of life is dying. The utensil to use it is the body that you're in is broken. He goes on, or the wheel broken at the cistern. It was very common to drop water down into the bucket down into the cistern by a wheel, on a pulley, essentially, and then draw it back up again. How many? For us, I guess the picture would be simply this: how many windmills have you seen around the Midwest that are just sitting there, doing nothing anymore. One day, there was a day in the past where they pumped water. Not anymore. And that's the same picture. Your life is like that. It'll come to the end. You'll go from a beautiful life. All of us, let's admit it. I mean, all of us sitting here, we're Justin and Christina, you're kind of young yet. All right, there you go. All right, Darcy too. I'm sorry. I don't want to, better not offend my daughter. All right. Anyway, okay. You remember what you were like in the 20s? Full of vigor and vigor. You were beautiful then. Look at us now. We're closer to broken than beauty. All right. It's life. It's just the way it is. All right. For the believer, that's not a problem. But he wants that emissary to hear this. Buddy, one day you're going to be broken and you better be prepared. So, verse 7, then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. The sovereignty of the Creator is coming back to reality. In Genesis 2:7, who was it that made man out of dust? The Creator. No wonder he says, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth. Because there comes a day wherein that dust of your body will go back to dust. And then the end of that verse, very important, and the spirit, and that term is generally, it's not talking about our spirit, who we are. It's talking about our breath. The very breath of us will return to the God who gave it to us. Genesis 2:7 again, he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. There's going to come a day when that breath that God gave you will be done. We as believers describe it as that God holds our life in his hands. And there will come a day when he says, your life is done. And the breath that he gave you to live will no longer go through your lungs. It's done. You better prepare for that day. Psalm 104:29, I don't turn there, but here it says, thou hidest thy face, talking about God. You hide thy face, and they, the people, are troubled. Thou takest away their breath, they die and return to their dust. It is another description of exactly what Solomon says here. So finally then, we have this dark foreboding, this final challenge to the emissary. Vanity of vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity. The dark finality of life without God is that it's empty. And it's proven every time a living person dies. All of their desires, all the things they live for, without God, is done. Now, what are you going to do about that? Well, come back next time and I'll tell you, okay? that's really the verses of the rest of the chapter, all right? But the final challenge, remember thy Creator. Now, believer, the challenge for us tonight is this. Thank you for giving me the extra time to finish up tonight on this section. The challenge is this. And this is what I find hard for this blunt, straightforward American. Solomon, in wisdom, took this emissary through a long route to bring him to the point of conviction. One of the questions I want to ask Solomon when you get to heaven is this. Solomon, so how many times did you use the truth of the book of Ecclesiastes to reach someone for the Lord? I want to hear those stories. Can you tell me and have... introduce me to the folks that you led to the Lord through these truths. That'll be great. So he is carefully, and now in this passage in particular, talking about death, he just didn't, like I said, point his pointy finger in their face and said, you're going to die. Why don't you get saved? He beautifully described the process of dying to arrest the attention of that young man, to help him think, not just be offended. May we, in our sharing of the gospel, speak the truth in love. And like God does, I mean, we're his tool, and we just need to let him help us, all right? Woo the sinner to repentance. Not beat him over the head with truth. That will be a wonderful tool in Satan's hand to turn them away from truth. To me, the way he handled this at the beginning of chapter 12 is convicting. I need to speak the truth, and he did. Every picture here draws him to the conclusion, you're going to die. And then he says, vanity of vanity, all is vanity, says the preacher. I'm telling you, Solomon says, he's the preacher. I'm telling you, you're going to die. And without God, it's all empty, it's all worthless. But he's done it in such a way that now he can, in the last verses, tell him, come to God. And the expected end of chapter 12 is that emissary gets saved. He could do no other. The conviction of God, the truth of God has drawn him to the Lord. Like I said, I'll be excited to meet all the people that he led to the Lord through the book of Ecclesiastes. That's pretty amazing. Okay, thank you for your patience. Let's have a word of prayer. Lord, thank you for your word, and thank you for the beauty and power of it. Lord, may we not hide from the reality that we're going to die, and may we help others not to hide from that reality so that they would come to the Lord. It's in your precious name we pray.